One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Person, have you heard about Squeaker Game? It's not Squid Game. Have you heard about it?
Squeaker Game.
Squeaker Game. It's like S-U-I-K-A. I noticed it was number one in the eShop charts on the Nintendo store. And I was like, what the hell is this? I've not heard about this. No one's emailing me about Squeaker stuff. So I downloaded it. Have you seen the emerging fruit drop genre that this is from?
Fruit drop genre sounds like some new PR language that you're inventing here. And also, people email you?
Well, people email about like whatever's going on, latest releases, things like that. But no one from the Squeaker Massif got in touch. So it was up to me to do my own primary research. My point is that I've discovered the fruit drop genre. That was what took up most of my weekend. And I'm going to tell you all about it. We're also going to get to whatever news is going on in the industry. This is the wind-up, you know, et cetera, all sorts of intros. I'm Scott Tilford. That's Ewan Patterson. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, mate. I mean, I'm pretty fluey. I don't know if people can hear the glog. The glug,
Hong Kong fluey.
The Hong Kong fluey, literally right now. Number one sickness guy. That is me.
I think you sound pretty great, but I guess we'll see how you go. If you need a minute to do some sneezing, do some stuff. Squeaker Game, because we're going to open on stuff that we've been playing. We've both been playing RoboCop Rogue City, which continues to low-key be one of the best games of the year. That thing's awesome. I've been playing a lot of Squeaker Game, which I just wanted to randomly mention, because I guarantee there'll be some people out there who have seen this thing in the charts, wondering what the living hell it is. And then we'll get to all the different news topics that are doing the rounds as well. But yeah, Squeaker Game, that thing, if you haven't seen, is just a game about dropping various pieces of fruit into like a little container. And if two types of the same type are next to each other, it's all physics based, so you're sort of dropping them in, they all kind of cascade together, and if two types are the same type, they merge into the next evolution of that shape, that fruit piece, and you want to get all 12 evolutions all the way through to try and get as many points as
you
can.
So what I'm getting from here right now, Scott Telford, yeah. I could be completely wrong, is that it's a mixture of Tetris and Pokemon, but instead of Pokemon it's fruit.
Yeah, literally. And it's just like, and once you start Googling, because I went on my phone, I was like, I need this on my phone. I've got it on my Switch. I need it in as many places as possible. There are 50, 60 clone versions of this thing that are doing the rounds. And I don't even know if Squeaker Game, as it's called on the eShop, spelled S-U-I-K-A. And I don't even know if that's the original. I don't know if that's someone else getting in on it. And then they've managed to get at the top of the eShop chart. It was only £2 to buy it. But I also managed to get, there was a monkey version that I got on my phone. But it just seems like it's this explosion of the hashtag fruit drop genre that is a whole thing. Mate, and I'm on board with it.
If there's a, for the new Planet of the Apes movie, if there's some brand strategist out there at like, I think it's like, is it Paramount or Fox? I don't know. If someone's out there looking at this, you just mentioned monkey Squeaker Game. They've gone, we need to put Caesar in this. We're going
to... Oh, my God!
And they'll call it Apes Together Strong, and then you'll have all the different evolutions going on. I mean, you know, just give me a call.
The thing is, like, how did it take us this long to merge, like you said, Tetris and Pokemon? The idea being that you're dropping the pieces next to each other, and the satisfaction of them all just doing little pops as they go next
I'm
to each other.
I'm really it's curious. Nice. Like, is this... Like, so two questions, right?
Yeah.
What is the most surprising fruit evolution you've had so far? And number two, is this just a new iteration of Candy Crush? Are you being Candy Crushed right now?
Well, that's the thing, right? Because we had the match three genre was the thing for the last sort of 10 years. And then at the minute, it displays the evolutionary loop on the side of the screen. So you know what you're aiming for. It maxes out at a watermelon. That's the biggest thing you can get. But you start with like berries. And then in the monkey one, you get a monkey hanging onto the berry. Hanging onto the banana. But then different, you get different like... I don't know, lychees and stuff. There was some stuff that I didn't know what it was. I've definitely eaten it before, but I didn't know what the name of it was. So I'm just getting all the fruit, mate. But it's one of those things where the Suika game on Switch, to recommend, if anyone else is getting into the fruit drop genre, Suika game's the best one. And the it's called Watermelon Drop is the one that I've got on my phone, the monkey one. That seems to be quite highly rated, but the physics aren't as good. They're not as weighty as in Suika game. So I'm just saying, I feel like because I finally wrote all 4,000 words of the Game of the Year ranking, that I'm winding down by losing my mind playing Suika game. So I'm letting people know. If you want to get into the fruit drops, it's good stuff.
Get into the fruit, those fruit drop activations. You're all about them.
those key activations. Yeah, yeah. Nice to e-meet you. It's some green shoots of recovery. PR's a whole language, which me and you have been around when we've had to interface with these types of people. But there's a language to PR that like certain people speak, and at some point it's just incomprehensible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I've got to be honest, Scott. All of that fruit stuff, it's gone straight. I mean... Are we going to get to a point now we're going to get fruit trading cards? Are we going to get people being like, hey, here's my level 5 watermelon?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, I would take it. I'm waiting for the... the thing is, like, you know when Vampire Survivors blew up across last year? And then it was like, you sort of got a few... Like, later in the year, you got a couple of copycats. Like, there was a Doom clone. There was, like, an official Doom game that was done Vampire Survivors style. And there's a Tomb Raider game as well. Like, they didn't really have a genre name, but, like, an auto-shooter or whatever. So I'm waiting for the Activisions, the Ubisofts, whoever, to latch onto this. Because there's clearly money in Pokemon Meets Tetris. And then we'll see. We'll see how much they can rinse it dry. But I'm just saying, that's what my weekend was. Something else, though, that our weekends were is RoboCop Rogue City, a game that continues to, well, have glitches in its cutscenes, but for the most part, it's pretty damn good. How are you finding it?
Yeah, you mentioned the glitchy stuff there. Like, it's one of those where I'm like, this is a perfect example of a game that has glitches that are not necessarily really, like, they're a little bit annoying sometimes. There's, like, some jank to it, but it kind of just adds to the charm. You know, the lighting... like effects in this game are actually gorgeous. I think I mentioned last time we spoke about it, I was doing it all in quality mode rather than performance mode because I just wanted to savor those puddle reflections because they look so great. But yeah, perfect usage of a license. It feels like the most Paul Verhoeven-y thing that we've gotten in, like, in terms of the RoboCop franchise, like, going on forward. Obviously, he only directed the first movie. This feels so spiritually in tune with that that it's honestly surprising, because when it was first announced, I just thought, oh, they're going to miss the point of RoboCop, aren't they? Mm. But no, it totally does understand the point of RoboCop, and it's a great time.
Yeah, I want to like hold it up as like a new bar setter. Like, this is what it's like taking like a legacy IP, like a legendary thing, drilling down to the original essence of it, and then making something that... Because I really love, like you said, the environments look awesome, the lighting, the effects and everything. It is on Unreal Engine 5, so it has like a general sort of like a baseline of quality. But in terms of how, like, people's hairstyles or the things that they're wearing or whatever, it feels directly out of those movies. Like, it is of a time. And I kind of love that. Like, I love that every single group of thugs has a crazy hairstyle back from like the late 80s, early 90s, when every little miscreant was like into metal and they just had spiked collars or whatever. That was the worst thing you could possibly be. And like, I fought like a biker gang recently, and you can pick up their bikes and throw them at each other.
The street vultures.
There's the Torchheads as well that all have hair like the dude from The Prodigy, and it's awesome. And so I find that it's a mix of different gameplay styles is the thing as well. Like, you get on-rail sections where you're just taking dudes out. Well, not necessarily on-rails, but very, like, you know, closed area stuff. But then you have like miniature open world bits. You've got dialogue choices, you're solving little side missions, and then you have story driven stuff where it's like, okay, I can't shoot in this area because I'm getting some story reveal or some sort of memory based flashback thing that Alex Murphy himself is reacting to. And I just love that mix. I feel like it's ambitious, but only within a certain confine, but it knows exactly what it is. Yes. And I miss that across the board.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think we need more, like, if you're going to do a licensed game, like Taeyeon are doing it right with this, and obviously the Terminator game they did the other year, which I haven't played, but I will definitely now be checking out.
It's worse than this. This is way better.
In terms of, I think I mentioned it to you the other week, like, I'm just happy with the licensed game if they get the sounds right. It's why I had a great time with Aliens Fireteam Elite, because even if your game is not that great, and that one was good, is a benchmark for, like, alien co-op shooters is pretty fun. It would have made it an FPS rather than a third-person shooter because it's less scary as a third-person shooter. But by the by, I can get away with any flaws as long as I can hear the pulse rifle go... and then it's the same with hearing RoboCop sort of 09 go off and, like, you know, just everything else about it. It just really, like, yeah, just a fun time. And it's kind of been a weirdly good year for Verhoeven movie game adaptations, because there's the Starship Troopers game that's currently, correct me if I'm wrong, it's currently in beta. I know it's playable on PC. It's not, I don't think it's coming to consoles yet, which is a huge shame because I really want to play it. But yeah, good time for Verhoeven-y things. And obviously the Helldivers sequel is coming out next year, and that's kind of seemingly Starship Troopers inspired too. So time for some more social satire and sci-fi games again.
You've got like the tonal stuff, which obviously the Teon are like, they've been allowed to nail. Like, it's not, it doesn't feel corporatized. It doesn't feel like some publisher got in there and said, well, you need to have this mechanic, this loot mechanic, put this in, have multiplayer, do whatever. Like, it just feels like a bunch of people knew exactly what they were making and they managed to execute on it. I'm very curious how it sells. It seems like it's doing quite modestly. I mean, it's a very modest release anyway. And like we mentioned when we started talking about it, literally every time the camera cuts in a cutscene, it re-renders whatever it's looking at. And you can see, if you go through frame by frame, you can see all the half faces and pixelated faces and stuff, so that it does need another polish pass, but only in regards to the cutscenes. I find that it plays really, really well. However, if you throw someone using the throw command next to a wall, you'll just throw them through the entire building without the wall reacting to them.
They will just literally disappear through everything. I've had like a few minor gameplay foibles as well. There was one like character choice that Robo selected for me, and then the game punished me at the end of the level, being like, "You chose the wrong thing." And I was like, "Well,
oh, that's weird."
Mate, Peter Weller took over then. That wasn't me. just slightly annoying, but like, by and large, you know, it's still a really fun time. Like, I think, like, you know, some of the presentation, like we said, is a little bit lacking, but overall, you know, I'm having way more fun with this than I thought I would have with a RoboCop game. It is a fun time, and I, again, like, as someone who loves movies and kind of has a fondness for the janky licensed game era, I'm down for more stuff like this being made, as long as it has actual commitment to the license, it's making a game that makes sense for that license, then absolutely go for it. I was saying the other week, I really hope that these guys could do maybe like a Lethal Weapon game where it's like a co-op third person shooter. Ooh. Just so I can just shoot people and then a saxophone comes in and goes like that, and then I can go, I'm getting too old for this, and then move on.
You need I'm getting too old for this button, like the Scarface game had that swear button.
Yes,
like you need like an old 80s quip button. But I mean, they're slowly carving their name out as like the resurrectionist team of choice. Like, I think they started with the Rambo game, which was terrible. Terminator was a lot better, and especially in regards to the production, it was spot on. And then RoboCop is genuinely very, very recommendable. Like, we're mentioning some of the bugs and stuff, but they do not outshine the good parts whatsoever. And I like all the different dialogue options that are in here. Like, you do get to answer like a couple of sort of therapist parts of the game as well, where you're being asked specific questions about how much of the real Alex Murphy is in there. Do you just want to be full on RoboCop? Which nicely goes into the other parts of the game where you're then just a walking death machine.
And no spoilers as well, but they do actually like pay off later in the game when you, because I think I'm close to the ending now, but they do actually, like, the choices you make do actually matter. Like, some of them feel like pretty inconsequential, but the way that you really do get to, like you say, make your own interpretation of the character. Like, do you treat him as just the machine, or do you kind of shoot for the humanity that was, you know, shining through and was really like one of the core guiding tenets of the original Verhoeven film? So yeah, no, it's really fun, and like, I've been having, I'm just really, probably my biggest surprise of the year, if I'm being
totally
honest.
One of the things I was going to throw in is that in regards to the way that you upgrade stuff, like, they pull, like, there's a really cool system in regards to the main gun that you have. It's like the A19 or whatever.
The Auto 9, mate. It's an iconic prop.
I've not seen that movie in a long time. But that pistol, you upgrade it based on chipsets. You're dropping in different percentage amounts into the chips. You're rewiring it in a way that would then unlock things like more gore, single shot, whether the bullet splits into three, things like that, which is one cool thing. And then the other is that your main skills that you're unlocking go into whether you can maybe recharge health by going into like a circuit breaker that's in a level, or whether you can open a safe, or whether you can persuade someone when you're talking to them, which has, it's just the right amount of RPG-ness. It reminds me a bit of it's like Deus Ex. Like, it's like, you're walking through a level being like, oh, if I spec this way, I could have done that thing. And it's like, that's a good feeling to have in terms of like rewarding you immediately with the thing you just spent the point on.
What do you think that they should do after RoboCop? Because they did DLC for Terminator, so maybe we'll get some RoboCop DLC potentially. That'd be pretty fun. I know this one feeds into RoboCop 3 story. I'm putting it out there, I want a Lethal Weapon game, but also I could maybe see them doing something good with Blade Runner. Like, that's kind of like a sci-fi space. They've already done Terminator, RoboCop, Blade Runner would make sense maybe, but I'm kind of here for, I just want more 80s action inspired games. Give me that kind of stuff.
Well, the thing is, it's a different genre, but I'm going to shoot for the fences, if that's a phrase, and say The Thing. I want someone to do The Thing well, and I want you to have all the dialogue options.
Sorry,
that
I sounded like a cow then.
the agreeing cow. But I think, like, yeah, there hasn't been a Thing game since 2005. I loved that thing when it first came out.
You loved that thing?
I love that exact thing. It was a really good thing. I wouldn't even have realized I said that without you saying that. But yeah, I thought the thing was really, really good, that thing. And so I think that if you did that again with you take the dialogue options, you have the sort of general level of playing a character. And I think there would have to be a specific way. It would have to be a different genre, but I think it'd be really cool to do the visuals that you have here, like focus on the Antarctic base. And like, I don't know, I love the thing so much, the 1982 one, that I would love that done in any game.
I mean, if
form.
You're shooting for my fave boy, John Carpenter, then maybe we can get a Big Trouble in Little China game. That'd be pretty fun. I want to see more adventures of Jack Burton, so I can do more Jack Burton monologues. And
I don't know if you've played the Shadow Warrior games, but the Shadow Warrior series is very like Big Trouble in Little China, especially Shadow Warrior 3, where they had way more budget to have more fun with the quips and everything else. But yeah, we'll transition into some of the latest gaming news. This comes from Dusk Golem, regular Resident Evil leaker from over the past few years. Leaked some stuff in regard to Resident Evil 7, Resident Evil 2 Remake, and just Resident Evil stuff in general. Referring to what's ongoing about a Capcom mystery game. This comes from a Q&A that Capcom did, saying that they were going to be releasing a major video game before March 2024, and a lot of people assuming that it would continue the remake trend for Resident Evil. Maybe they're going to remake RE5 or whatever the hell it's going to be. Mr. Golem, as he's formerly known, weighed in and said that it's not that whatsoever, said that it's not going to be a remake of Resident Evil whatsoever, but there is going to be something revealed at the end of 2023. Now, that kind of means that it has to be the Game Awards. Also said it's not a Resident Evil remake, or it's not a Resident Evil thing in general. And it seems like whatever this thing is, I mean, if it's Capcom, for me, I'm hoping Onimusha, or I'm hoping Dino Crisis, or those feel like the two obvious ones. And especially when we have the Game Awards window, you might as well do it with a really big audience.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I know it's kind of like been the pipe dream for years that it would be Dino Crisis, but I feel like if you're looking at like what makes most business sense, we've just come off the back of like three very middling to bad Jurassic Park movies making billions of dollars at the box office. Mm-hmm. You've got some really fun indie-developed survival horror kind of like dinosaur games coming out. The names escape me at the minute, but like the actual game...
Well, there's the Ark series as well. I mean, yeah, like dinosaurs in general should be a bigger thing than they are.
It would make sense to me if they were looking at doing dinosaur-y stuff, because we're really wanting for stuff in that space. Mm. I think if you want to look at a AAA thing, the best we've got is Jurassic World Evolution, which, again, those are really fun kind of park simulator builder games, which, you know, really actually, you know, we're talking about good uses of the license. Like, that is a good use of that license. But yeah, no, I think a Dino Crisis would be the one that would make the most business sense to me. But, you know, what do I know? I'm just a humble Southern lawyer. I don't know what I'm talking about.
I'm just a Southern gentleman. I wonder how much they think the Dino Crisis name is outdated or something like that. Because Dino Crisis 3 was sort of legendarily mishandled. They took the whole franchise to space. They left the Dino Crisis 2 cliffhanger wide open. And then Dino Crisis 3 was like it was really mishandled in the development phase. They ended up giving the character jetpacks, and there was like a T-Rex in space, which should have been great, but at the same time was very much not. And I can only double down on what you said. I think that dinosaurs are sorely missing as an enemy type in games, and the T-Rex jump scare in the original Dino Crisis is iconic for a reason. I don't know if you played 2006's Turok, but I loved that weird little reboot they did. I know it didn't go down very well, but I thought the thing was really, really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I remember mates playing that one, but it was never one that I personally checked out. For me, the best T-Rex dino moment is in the Peter Jackson's King Kong game, where it shows up for the first time. Oh my, that noise you just made was like a perfect I know that I touched a good spot there. I love that game, man, and I would love for something to recapture the atmosphere, the creepiness, the kind of sense of like being powerless. I feel like the big mistake that video games make with dinosaurs, if they even have them at all, is that they tend to make them too fallible. Like they make them too weak, so
like
the point
cannon fodder,
where they kind of become like xenomorphs, which are on swarm. They lose kind of some of their menace or whatever. So I would like to make them scary again. I don't know how you do that, because guns kind of, you know, organic matter plus bullets equals dead things. So I don't know how you make that.
Well, you're mentioning being scary as well. I'm just thinking, when Dino Crisis came out, all first three of them, we didn't have the latest scientific findings that they actually had feathers and all that stuff. Mm. And I know the Jurassic Park game, or Jurassic World movies have adapted to that over time, but there is a potential that you're just fighting a bunch of large chickens. Mm. Like, I think it has to be done well. Like, I think that, like, the original T-Rex designs, the original Velociraptors, things like that, they were terrifying. Big old lizards coming at you with the razor-sharp teeth and everything. I'm a big feathers guy, but I wonder whether that's a consideration
as well. No, that would not. I think you can make scary bird-like creatures. I've seen some of the mock-ups that these artists have been doing for their bird dinos. I think you can make it work. I mean, it really just depends. It's all about, like, artistic license and how you interpret the historical findings, because there's still not consensus in the scientific community as to whether or not the T-Rex was a cowardly scavenger or the actual apex predator or whatever. So, you know, you can do what you want with there, as long as, like, you know, I'm down for more dino time. I want more dino time, basically.
I think it's long overdue, and I think the amount of like strides that they've made on the newest Resident Evil games, the engine that they made for those games, literally called the RE engine, is very, very malleable as a piece of kit and looks absolutely gorgeous. Like, when I was playing through the Resident Evil 2 remake back in 2019, I was just like, this but with dinosaurs would be perfect. Like, you don't need to do an isometric, you know, corridor-based horror. You can do the over-shoulder thing, and then you just need to nail the atmosphere, and it's like all the low-lighting stuff. And when you were exploring in RE2, I was like, just add Velociraptors. I don't know how hard it is to put this stuff together.
Alan,
stay away from the dream sequences, though, if we need to do that. Next news item down comes from Xbox Era's Nick Baker, who said he's heard new information on Monolith's Wonder Woman game. Now, this is their I wanted to just note this. This is their first game since 2017, Shadow of War, and their second in almost 10 years, because Shadow of Mordor was 2014. So they're kind of in the same pool as Rocksteady, where they're just underneath Warner Brothers just going, can we get something out, for the love of God, please?
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
And so we have this write-up over on it's on the Xbox Era podcast, and Nick Baker's talking about it. He was a very, very reliable leaker over the years, saying that he's seen the game, or at least in regards to the information that he's passing on, it's very much gameplay based. So he says the game looks a lot like Gotham Knights, and said there are some visual improvements, but that seems to be the nearest comparison. You use the invisible jet, which is Wonder Woman's signature invisible jet.
Yes.
It's mentioned as a fast travel method, so I don't think you're actually going to be piloting this thing, but that would make sense if you think about something like Arkham Origins. You pick a place to go, it cutscenes into the jet and go from there. He says there's a general feeling of a good version of Crackdown in regards to the weight and the traversal and the jumping around, which is a good comparison to make, even though I disagree with the implication that Crackdown was never good in the first place. He mentions that combat uses the lasso of truth to wrap around and slam enemies. He mentions Insomniac Spider-Man's web attacks as a comparison. Mentions that the world design includes mobs of enemies, mini-bosses, things like that, with chests and loot drops like boots, braces, torso gear coming with individual stats, just like the newer God of Wars. Now, that's the bit that could go either way. The final thing here is that the game is currently running at 30 FPS, but the team are trying to target a 60 FPS performance mode. So there's a lot in here. The bit about the loot chests and the drops and the loot stuff, that's the thing that lines directly up with David Zaslav, the CEO, wanting more games as a service, wanting more live service components. And that was the thing that killed Gotham Knights in regards to the public perception of it. So thoughts on all this?
It's interesting because I feel like of all the DC characters who you could lootify, Wonder Woman makes the most sense because her design over the years has gone through so many different iterations. Mm. You know, you have like the classic look, you have like the biker look from the 90s, which I personally think is very Ooh. Underrated. And then you have like the more armored looks that we've gotten in recent years. And if it's shooting for a mythological vibe and, you know, actually being set in Themyscira and diving into different Greek realms, then, which I really hope it is, because I don't want it to just be a generic open world city thing. I need this thing to lean into what makes Wonder Woman unique as a character. Then I guess that is conducive. Like you say, it depends on how well they do it. If it's like how it was in you know, like if it's like a traditional, you know, RPG Assassin's Creed kind of thing where you just find things and you equip them, then that makes sense to me. But if it leans more into the live service-y stuff, which, you know, we should say that they've come out and refuted is going to be in the game, then that would be frustrating. The thing that I'm curious about is that I was not expecting the Gotham Knights comparison because I was thinking that they would lean more into kind of like a Shadow of Mordor, Shadow of War adjacent style vibe because the sword combat in that game was so punchy and weighty and would lend itself so well to Wonder Woman. And they mentioned there the lasso being used in combat, which is what I really want. The thing that kind of maybe makes me a little bit anxious there is that they're comparing it to the web attacks from Spider-Man. And I like the combat in Spider-Man fair enough, but it doesn't feel especially weighty. And I feel if I'm going to be slamming people around with the lasso of truth, I want to see what cool physics things you can pull off with there, you know, wrap it around stuff, almost like the lasso in the Red Dead Redemption games, but wielded by a super strong woman. I want to kind of see that involved. So yeah, the Gotham Knights comparison is curious to me, especially the Crackdown vibes as well, although I guess you do want Wonder Woman to fly around and like be jumpy and stuff. I'm kind of worried now that we're just going to get a kind of a blanket open world and it's going to just be Wonder Woman jumping around and doing things. I think the way you do a Wonder Woman game is to make it more linear and blend the Shadow of War with the Batman Arkham style approach. That's my personal opinion though.
See, for me, I like the description of this. Like, I love the Crackdown games. Even Crackdown 3 I would say is recommendable in terms of just being more Crackdown. But it's one of those things where they need to nail the way that all these different components talk to each other. I think that the loot stuff is a potential cause for concern. Like you said, they did come out and say it's not going to be a, I forgot the exact phrasing, but it was, it's not going to be a live service game or something like that. I personally think they'll just have a different name for it. There'll still be monetization over time. There'll still be seasons of content or something approximating that. It's only my personal thoughts on it, but I don't see Warner Brothers backing away from that when the CEO himself continues to want to run the thing into the ground. So I guess we'll see how that shakes out. But I like the idea of a big open world set of traversal mechanics and then really good punchy combat. It gives me Prototype vibes. I don't know if you played Prototype.
Yes. Yeah.
But that game was very aggy. It was very angsty. I loved the damn thing. But that had a really good feeling of like drop in, do some cool combat, and then immediately you're back flying away or you're running up a building or whatever. Hulk Ultimate Destruction vibes as well. And so I would take a modern version of that, like the freedom of that. And as long as they can have it be immediate when you're going from one thing to the next, from traversal to combat, then that could be really, really cool. Nick also mentions that he's not sure about what's happening with the truth mechanic, which has been mentioned quite a lot in the rumors, because of just the way that Shadow of Mordor and Shadow of War handled enemies, where you could grab any of them, you could force them to your side, you could make them reveal different things. But it makes sense that if you're using the Lasso of Truth, one of the character's signature powers, that would also come back in some form. Plus, WB did trademark the Nemesis system back in 2014. It's why we haven't seen it anywhere. So you would assume that they're going to lead the charge with this, that it'll be some sort of building an army, doing some sort of factional warfare thing across an open world, with, like you said, a superhuman, super strong person at the heart of it, kicking the living hell out of everybody. So I kind of like that. I'm more on board with this than I was when it was announced.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. Like, Wonder Woman's a really cool character. Like, even though I'm burnt out on superheroes in general, same. Like, there are so many great Wonder Woman comics out there. Monolith, as we know, are a talented studio. If they are allowed to cook, they will cook something really cool. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of, like, just surprised with the Gotham Knights comparisons because I wasn't expecting that.
I'm not sure if he's just using it as, like, a fidelity thing. Because it's just a general sort of comment on, like, oh, you know, it reminds him of Gotham Knights. He thinks things will look better going forward. It just seems to be where they're at. Because it wouldn't be the same engine anyway. We're talking about different devs and everything. So it's just maybe it's just a go-to comparison in the moment on a podcast that maybe doesn't have, you know, as much meat to it as it might do when we think we finally see it. We mentioned Game Awards before. Maybe we'll see something at the Game Awards. Assumedly, there's something ready to show. So I guess we'll see. Next news item down is industry analyst over at Circana, Matt Piscatella, noting that Alan Wake 2 was outside the top 150 games played on PlayStation 5. That's been since launch. The game still doesn't have a physical release either. But I just wanted to throw this in. It's just more of a general discussion thing here because Alan Wake 2 is routinely held up as one of the best games of the year. It's in our top 20 that'll be coming out later in the year as well. And it was nominated a lot of the Golden Joysticks the other week. But yeah, it's very much not in the top 150, which puts it way down the run. There's not a specific number for this, but Piscatella is a known industry analyst, so he's sharing those things. And also, it's worth throwing in that for the Black Friday sales, the Epic's own store had 33% off, even though the game was only a couple of weeks old. So I think it's one of those things where Remedy's games are always word of mouth. Control struggled a lot at launch as well. But general thoughts on Mr. Wake?
I mean, this raises an interesting quandary, doesn't it? Because I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, the stats over the last few years have said that more people are buying digital compared to physical. Yep. Is digital
like 80-20
outpaced the physical market by that wide a margin?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, God, you can't really say that if it was in physical form, more people would have been picking it up in shops or whatever. I don't know. It's an interesting point because I think we all agree that when Alan Wake 2 was announced, it was a bit of a surprise sequel announcement because I think Alan Wake, the original Alan Wake, while it has a cult following, it's never really gone beyond, though. It was a good game kind of reputation. I don't think people were holding up the original Alan Wake as a huge masterpiece. And then we got the weird...
Ooh, what to know?
As a huge masterpiece. It's definitely a lot of charm to it. And I'm a big Alan Wake fan, but it's not really something that I was like, that is one of the best games of the generation. I think Control outpaces it in terms of, you know, pretty much every area. And then you had the direct-to-digital Alan Wake's American Nightmare thing, which is like a weird arcadey shooter. So maybe Alan Wake 2, people look at that, they already think of like a convoluted storyline, they got to go back and obviously play remastered. There's a lot of different things kind of going against its favor there.
I'm so curious as well because they, having finished Alan Wake 2, that game is confusing AF. Like, I mean, it's one of those things where you need to get absolutely stuck into it. It fundamentally relies on not only the original Alan Wake, but the American Nightmare DLC and Control. You need to have a really good, solid working understanding of all three of those releases, at least I would say, to get something close to some purchase on what's going on in Alan Wake 2. Like, it fires out the gates with a load of information based on those previous titles, especially... American Nightmare in regards to a specific character, which I wasn't expecting. That's the only thing I hadn't played.
No one played American Nightmare.
I know! Which I guess is kind of Remedy going like, well, you know what? We're going to make this fundamental and make you go and hunt it down or whatever. But yeah, for Alan Wake itself, I feel like that represents the pivot point for Remedy. Like a lot of people know them as the Max Payne devs, and then Max Payne 3 went to Rockstar, and then they did Alan Wake, which was a lot more surrealist, a lot more Lynchian. I mean, Max Payne had those bits and pieces, but Alan Wake was when they started really steering into it. But because it was an Xbox exclusive, licensing-wise, it was always held up for most of the 2010s, and they only really got it back at the very end of the last decade. And then Control was just full on like Remedy AF, which is what I want from them. But I wonder if there is that wing of the fandom that want another Max Payne or want something that's more straightforward. And then when Alan Wake 2 is a survival horror that's a very surrealist experience, and a lot of the discourse around it is just how confusing it is, that makes it hard to pick up. I mean, there was bits and pieces of it, especially in regards to the combat, that I thought were very, very messy and took a long time to get used to. It doesn't knock the overall quality, but it definitely does if you're a more casual fan.
It doesn't help as well that it's released in a hugely busy holiday period for games. You know, it came out a week after Spidey 2, like you just said. Call of Duty, even though that thing sucks, you know, that's a behemoth of an industry title. People are going to be playing Call of Duty. I don't know, it feels like if I was looking at the release of Alan Wake 2, I understand the compulsion to get your spooky game out in time for the spooky season. I would have been personally delaying this until March next year or something. Basically give it more of a clean break to actually sit in and become, you know, that game. And I want this game to be successful. I've not actually played Alan Wake 2 yet because I've been like saving my money for the holiday period. Yeah. And
I think you'll be indicative of a lot of people either waiting for a holiday sale or just thinking like I'm not prioritizing it because of Spider-Man 2 or something like that.
Yeah, and like I want to replay through Alan Wake Remastered again and also replay through Control, like you said, because you know these are dense narratives that you need to make sure you're fully invested into to get the whole thing out of. So you know, it's just a shame. I want you know, Remedy, like one of our great game studios, I need them to be doing well, and it's a shame that I think maybe, you know, there was a lot of things going against its favor in terms of finding a widespread mainstream audience. Again, I would have basically been putting this until I would personally have delayed this until next year. As soon as that initial delay came and we were thinking of like having it around the Spider-Man kind of window, I think it should have been moved along.
What I want to mention as well is the I mentioned the fact that you need the work and knowledge of the previous games because they have only steered into and Sam Lake, you know, the one of the head writers, like one of the I forget what his specific title at Remedy is in terms of how far back he goes, a very important dude, you know, very much the author of Alan Wake kind of thing, or Remedy, said that, you know, he's very excited about the Remedy shared universe stuff, and that does come into play across Alan Wake too, but I wonder if that has the opposite effect on the way that it used to feel when the MCU was rolling out, where we used to enjoy picking up the pieces to get the full picture, where I was like, now it's a bunch of homework and you've got to go watch all these other things, and I'm weird with it. Like it's not that I don't you know, lose my mind when certain I'm gonna keep it very vague, companies or entities are mentioned in Alan Wake 2 and then whatever happens from there, but it only works if you've been there and done the reading or done the things before. I wonder how much that works against them.
Yeah, I mean, it's a novelty, isn't it? I feel like it feels like a pointless addendum to have these. It's cool when Alan Wake and Control crosses over, I guess. I don't know if that's at the forefront of people's minds when they look at this sort of stuff. But yeah, I feel like, again, as the MCU has shown over the last few years, the more you build that house of cards up, the more difficult those House of Cards are to actually get into, and then ultimately the easier they are to kind of collapse around them. So, yeah, I don't know, because it's not really necessarily fully telegraphed that they've got, like, this intricate, like, shared universe thing going on.
Well, they did. It's funny because they got the license back, the IP back for Alan Wake, and then they did the Alan Wake DLC for Control, which was the first crossover thing that we'd had. And then Alan Wake 2 has quite a lot of that stuff going on. But like you said, it's not like you're going in knowing that you should have done the previous things. Like the MCU kind of worked for that period of time because it was expected, even if they didn't advertise it, saying you better watch these other three things. That was part of the conversation. And Alan Wake 2 does work by itself. It's just that I would say you're so much better off if you know the previous ones. But yeah, it's an interesting thing trying to I ask quite a lot of someone, just go, oh, I guess I'll check this out, it's been recommended, and then immediately not having any idea what's going on. And then one of the best things that it does is that if you play Control after, like, I've been replaying Control after finishing Alan Wake 2, that retrospectively works as a sequel, that they kind of both complement each other, so it almost doesn't matter which one you play first, but we're still talking about a very dense, convoluted, messy narrative that you've really got to spend the time unpicking to like I said, to find some purchase on it. But yeah, as of right now, it's not being played very much, at least on PlayStation, and I guess we'll see what happens going forward. I wanted to talk about Ubisoft and the thing that happened with the Assassin's Creed pop-up advert. I don't know if you saw this.
I caught a glimpse of it. It popped up in my feed today.
Oh god. So yeah, so apparently towards the end of last week, a lot of people who were playing, one of the only games that was reported that this happened in was Assassin's Creed Odyssey, but it was reported quite a lot that some players, when they went to bring their map screen up, it instead loaded a pretty much 80-20 split in terms of the amount of screen size it was taking up, a pop-up advert of Assassin's Creed Mirage advertising it for the Black Friday week and saying that it was like 20% off or something like that. And immediately a lot of people said, don't for the love of God put pop-up adverts in my game. What the hell are you guys doing? Ubisoft got out there and replied across the weekend saying that this was a result of a technical error that we addressed as soon as we learned of the issue. And they said it wasn't intentional. I don't know how it couldn't be intentional. What do you misplace the pop-up coding in a different... Like, what are you talking about? I tell you what's really interesting coming out of it, though, is that going into the next few years, Ubisoft are planning the Assassin's Creed Infinity platform, which is... an ongoing thing that's happening across the board. Like Call of Duty is becoming Call of Duty HQ. You can see it on how Modern Warfare 3 isn't its own executable. It goes through Modern Warfare 2, or it goes through the Call of Duty launcher. I wonder whether it's that's what they want to do. Get you on a platform, advertise one game while you're playing the other one, and try and have that almost reciprocal sort of, you're stuck in the loop of advertising thing once they've got you sat there.
Yeah, it feels like that way to me. I think that, yeah, very dubious to be like, oh, I'm sorry, this was a glitch, the pop-up glitch that you couldn't have foreseen coming through. It seems like, okay, you very sneakily put some very aggressive advertising in your game through the most, you know, commercially active period of the year. I don't buy it, personally speaking. And yeah, it does kind of feel like they're moving into that platform thing. I don't like the idea of pop-up stuff because that gives me the ick. However, I do kind of have a little bit of nostalgia for that period in time. I don't know if you recall at the end of the 2000s where if you were playing a game like Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter, you would... This is such a niche game.
Nostalgia.
This is such a niche gaming memory. But if you were in one of the levels of Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter 2, or like in the multiplayer as well, you could come across like old newspapers or poster billboards that were advertising movies. And the last update for that game, it was advertising the Transporter 2 with Jason Statham. That in itself to me is kind of funny. It's probably also really, really cursed, but yeah, I mean, as long as it's not like aggressively popping up, like I don't want to have to click away from adverts just to navigate a part of the game. Like that's stupid.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like you're fundamentally getting in the way of a gameplay loop or in the way of like the user experience. I can't think of any real way to make it palatable. The way you described that thing reminded me of the conversation around when, I think it was when Burnout Paradise was coming out.
It's the exact same technology. And the idea that...
Yeah, the idea that EA would swap out the billboards so that you would see more up-to-date adverts. And it does happen quite a lot in sports games. But that was a whole thing across the 2000s, early 2010s, the idea of how do we maximize the person, whatever they're looking at, and stuff like that. But yeah, for Ubisoft, I wouldn't trust them to not do this. We know they're making Assassin's Creed Infinity anyway, so I guess we'll see what that thing turns into. But I just wanted to mention that. They say it's a technical error for now, but I wouldn't be surprised if that just is their future going forward. The last thing is Bloober Team, the developers of the Silent Hill 2 remake, recently putting out one of the, you know, those like apology JPEG images that keeps doing the rounds. So we always knew when we see one of them that it's going to be relating to a delay, and it is in this case. They said that they are delaying the game. For my knowledge, it didn't have a concrete release date. I think a few things have been mentioned, but I feel like it was over the past few years since the game was announced, and then the conversation around it didn't feel like there was a specific date they were you know, actually going to nail. But they said overall they're waiting for more information from publisher Konami before proceeding, which is an interesting turn of phrase when you're the developers. However, this does come after the Pyramid Head Origin DLC was leaked, which is one of the many things that they're trying to bolt onto the idea of a Silent Hill 2 remake. And I guess we'll see how true all that stuff is, but the general reception to the Silent Hill 2 remake has been mixed at best anyway. And I like Bloober Team. I've liked their stuff so far. I like Observer. You know, I thought the Blair Witch game was quite ambitious. Like, I like them as a little team doing what they can, but the general reception to Silent Hill 2 remake has been, oh dear God, get them off it. And I wonder where the idea of a Pyramid Head origin story came from. I forget the name of the dude, but the guy that actually came up with Pyramid Head, the artist back in the day, tweeted saying, I wish I never created Pyramid Head.
Oh my God.
It's just being passed around now. It's like Silent Hill 2 just is Pyramid Head, apparently, and there's nothing else to it. But yeah, thoughts on all this stuff?
It's curious. You mentioned there that it is weird, the wording of the delay announcement. What was it, waiting for word from Konami? Or
yeah, they're waiting for more information from publisher Konami before proceeding. I added the proceeding, but they're waiting for more information from Konami right now. There's a whole JPEG image about how they're considering the release, and we're going to be delaying it or pushing it back and considering things. And it's like, it just reads like a studio that is kind of reeling from the general reception across the year. And then also some of the leaks, like I mentioned, and just the idea that maybe they don't really know what the hell the Silent Hill 2 remake is supposed to be.
This seems so dumb. Like, as a statement to put out, all it does is cause more confusion. It casts more doubt on the project. It feels like it makes the job harder for the actual developers themselves. Because why would you put a statement out if you don't even know what Konami's response to all this backlash and stuff is? Then, yeah, that's really silly. I don't understand why they've made it harder for themselves with this statement. Like, it's not like transparency is like good to a certain degree, but this essentially is them saying, we have nothing to say right now other than we don't think we're ready to actually take this project on at the state that it needs to be, and we've told our bosses about it, and we'll see what they get back to us with. That just comes across as really, not good.
It's also after the Sound Hill Ascension stuff went down like a lead balloon. Like, that thing is still going. That thing's still a live service. But that whole idea of that game, quote-unquote game, is that it's an ongoing story. It updates. I forget the exact amount of seasons it has. I think it's 4. But fans can go on that. They can watch a bunch of in-game cutscenes with what looks like AI-generated dialogue based on the clips that are being shared around, and then try and vote on the way the story's going to play out. And initially, when they did that big Konami reveal stream last year, this Ascension thing was meant to be the bedrock of the new the canon going forward, and everyone's meant to have input on the different choices and assumedly who lives or dies or whatever. And I wonder, because that thing's been received so sourly, whether that is impacting the way that the overall Silent Hill push is going forward. I wouldn't put it past Konami to just be like, we don't know what the hell we're doing, and we got it wrong, and we're just going to pull all these, get the men out. Everything's going to blow up over there, so get them back. What, bring our boys home.
What are Konami, man? What? Why even Konami? Like, please, no.
How do we never use Konami to this point? That would have been the most obvious thing.
That was a complete slip on my behalf, but that is also really good.
We'll see what shakes out with it, but yeah, like I said, people already aren't big fans of Bloober, and I think the way that the Silent Hill IP is being handled, with Ascension being the first, you know, new thing of this new revivalist movement, didn't seem to go down very well, so we'll see. For now though, this has been The Wind-Up. I've been Scott Tailford. That's been you, Patterson. Go find Suika Game, and we'll catch you throughout the week. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.